Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into the Card Chronicle podcast. If you're listening to this, it is Wednesday morning, and my God, it means college basketball's back. I can't even remember the last time where we were talking about, like, I don't remember what this podcast was like during college basketball season last year. I remember doing it. I remember doing the emergency pod after we beat Duke, but it's been so long that it just, I don't know, it feels so good. And it's weird that it's happening now because this week, one of the most underrated weeks usually in college basketball, you always have the Maui Invitational, you get the Battle for Atlantis. Tournament games are happening at all hours of the day. Louisville's usually playing some big-time games. And instead, it's opening week. But my God, Dan, we're going to talk about Evansville. We're going to talk a little bit about Seton Hall. We'll talk about the football team won a game. But for now, how fucking good does it feel just to have college basketball back in some form?
I mean, it's literally like Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers when he calls in Owen Wilson. He's like, we got a big 3 weeks coming up. It's wedding season, baby. Like, that's literally how I feel with basketball. I'm like, it's card season, baby. Let's do this. There's not a better time if you're a Cards fan to be alive than the beginning of basketball. Yeah, all I can say is just buckle up and enjoy the ride. I know it's going to be bumpy and curvy this year with everything going on, but it's totally not going to dampen my mood, and I'm treating tomorrow as if it's a game in March.
I tweeted this earlier today. We're recording this Tuesday night. It's going to post Wednesday morning. I wanted to start the podcast with the Round Ball Rock remix from that SNL episode where they're like, bubba, 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 basketball. But I couldn't find it. It's like 3 seconds long, too. It doesn't really, I don't know if it would resonate on a podcast. So here we are. But I tweeted this out earlier today on Tuesday. Like, I feel like predicting how the college basketball season is going to go is kind of easy. And maybe I'm totally wrong about this. Maybe it winds up being a complete disaster. Maybe it winds up being totally perfect after these first couple of weeks. But like you said, games are being canceled all over the place. You've got these protocols where if anybody on your team, whether it's a player, a coach, a support staff member, test positive for COVID-19, you shut down everything for 14 days. So naturally, we've already had a bunch of games canceled. I kind of feel like this is how the first 4 months are going to go, the first 3.5 months. Like, you're going to have just mass cancellations, mass panic, everybody complaining, everybody bitching, people writing columns everywhere about, like, what are we even doing here? And maybe it's justified, maybe it's not. It's going to be a rough stretch, but really all anybody cares about is getting to March, getting to the NCAA tournament, getting those 68 teams. It's going to be, I mean, Selection Sunday or Selection whatever day it is going to be fucking hilarious because the committee is going to have to justify, like, well, this team played a bad schedule, but this team is coming in with 4 games. Like, who do we give the 11 seed to? So you're going to have this just really bizarre bracket that makes no sense and is impossible to predict. People are going to be pissed they got left out. But there's going to be no good way to make it happen. But then I think once we get to the tournament and everybody goes to Indianapolis, assuming that's where it winds up being played, like, it's going to be different. It's going to be weird, but it's going to be fun. You're going to have a shit ton of games. It's going to be the old drama. You're going to have a bunch of, you know, last second shots, all that good stuff. And in the end, you're going to have a Final Four that probably looks like most Final Fours do. Maybe there's a little bit of a Cinderella in there, but the national champion is probably going to be like one of the best teams in the country, one of the biggest programs in the country. And at the end of the day, everybody's going to talk about, well, what a great job they did to make this season happen, and totally forget about how panicked everybody was in November, December, January, and February. I feel like that's what we're in for. And I mean, hopefully Louisville's not all that affected. Hopefully we can play all 27 of our games. Probably not going to happen. There's probably going to be a couple of postponements, maybe some cancellations, but just as long as we get there, as long as we get to that tournament, I'm still excited. It's hard not to be.
I'm with you, and I think an underrated part of this season that we haven't experienced as a Louisville fan or a college basketball fan is just the holding of your breath, like the day before each game, be like, okay, is it actually going to happen? Like, is the game really going to be played? Like, there's not going to be some sort of last minute cancellation, like just a total kick in the dick, like waking up the morning of and seeing like a tweet like, hey, you know, someone tested positive, quarantined for 14 days. So the anticipation of knowing that the game is going to get there without, you know, anything canceling it is just going to add like a new element. And then obviously the games itself, which, you know, we all get excited for.
If you're looking for, I mean, something of potentially positive news, if you're wondering why the NCAA is doing this, why teams have to quarantine for 14 days, it's because that's the recommended quarantine period by the CDC. So the NCAA is basing it all off CDC guidelines. And we found out earlier on Tuesday, the CDC is now considering shortening the recommended 14-day quarantine period from 14 days to between 7 to 10 days, which could really help in college basketball to have more games played. Obviously, safety is of the utmost concern, but if that's a legitimate thing where it's not going to, you know, have any adverse effects, then that'd be good for the season to happen. But I'm with you. I mean, like we said, we're recording this Tuesday night. We may post this Wednesday morning, and 2 hours later, the game against Evansville might be canceled. You don't know. Seton Hall, who Louisville's scheduled to play on Friday, they had their first. They were supposed to play Winthrop tomorrow. That game got canceled because Seton Hall's had COVID issues. Their game on the 29th. I can't remember who they were playing. Somebody relatively big. I think it was actually Baylor. That's been canceled now because Scott Drew has COVID. So Seton Hall, they said today they're still playing. That they're practicing. They're back on the court. They're still planning on playing this game against Louisville on the 27th, but you never know. It may not happen, and it's just it's a totally different element. But for right now, it's hard. I'm just excited to see basketball. I mean, last season ended with such a void that is going to be impossible to fill. We're always going to wonder how that NCAA tournament would have played out. We're always going to wonder how Louisville would have done in the conference tournament, all that good stuff. And for it to just end so abruptly without any sort of notice, it still feels just so bizarre to look back and think about that game against Virginia being the last time we've seen a Louisville basketball game. I had to go to the hospital like right after that game. Remember,
that seems like 2 years ago. Oh my God. We're like, oh my God, you have to go to the hospital.
I mean, that whole weekend, like that was like the last weekend of college basketball that we got. And I spent half of it in the fucking hospital. It's been a long, it's been a terrible year, but that bitter taste makes it all the worse. But if you had to point to one thing that you're most excited about, even in this unusual circumstance for this season, what are you pointing to?
Are you talking about with like the Louisville team in general or college basketball in general?
With us, with Louisville.
The thing that I'm most excited about, I don't know. It's just sometimes when you get a lot of new blood on your team, it's exciting. I mean, I know we've already harped on this, you know, in past podcasts, but it reminds me a lot of that 2011 team where we didn't really know coming in what they were going to be like. And obviously, you know, they opened up the Yum Center with a win against Butler, and they took off from there. Obviously, the season that year didn't end the way we wanted to, but we had a lot of new faces. We thought it was going to be a bridge year, and it ended up being a successful year. So I'm hoping that we can, you know, exceed whatever pundits' expectations are that they have for us. I do think we have some nice pieces. Obviously, injuries have already played a part. But I'm excited to see more of Chris Mack's players in there. Malik is really the last one from the Patino era. So it'll be nice to see Mac have his guys in there and see, you know, kind of how this works out.
Yeah, I'm excited, but also kind of terrified by how unique this is, where we haven't seen any, like a lot of these guys play in a Cardinal uniform in a real game that matters yet. Like, we've gotten no idea. The Super Six outside of David Johnson and Sam Williamson hardly saw the floor last year. Like, we've heard some guys have made improvements. We've heard so much about Jalen Withers during the offseason. We haven't seen them play in a game. And Carly Jones, I mean, the guy has won the gold jersey 5 out of the 7 weeks we've been practicing. He's getting all these accolades. Like, what if he comes out tomorrow and just sucks? Like what if he comes out and looks like Stanley from The Office out of nowhere? And just like
all I can think about with him is like, is this what UK fans like go through every year? Because they're the king of hyping up their players in the off season. And like, I mean, yeah, of course some of them do pan out, but I mean, like the hype for this kid has just reached out of control proportions where it's almost not fair to him. Of what he's going to be expected to do, and it's not his fault, but yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to him play. I have no idea really, you know, what we're going to get from him.
I couldn't agree more with the expectations. Like, and again, like I know that we've seen him play. I know you can find film of him playing at Radford on YouTube or wherever, but like, I was almost hoping towards the end of the offseason that they would stop giving him the gold jersey. Because I'm terrified, and by all accounts, he's a kid who can handle any sort of criticism or anything, but criticism from Radford fans after a bad game is a little bit different from Louisville fans if you, you know, go out there and shoot 2 of 15 against Seton Hall and Louisville loses on Friday. Like, he's going to be, like, people are going to be making jokes, people are going to be adding him on Twitter, like, it's just going to be a different bear for him, and you're right, it's not entirely his fault that these expectations have been kind of thrust upon him, but if he's, we're at the point now where if he's not really good, and if David Johnson, that sophomore leap isn't real, and if Sam Williamson, whenever he gets fully healthy, doesn't make a similar leap, like, there's no chance of us being a really good team, like a top 4 or 5, maybe even 60 in the NCAA tournament. Like, those things have to happen. We're hoping guys like Quinn Slezinski and Jalen Withers and Josh Nickelberry and whoever else, DeAndre Davis, wind up being a little bit better than their recruiting rankings would have indicated, but, like, I think those are the three, like, we've got to have those. If those guys aren't all really good, it's going to be tough for this Louisville team to be really good.
I completely agree. And, I mean, I've just spent, like, the past couple days just in my head. It's just going to be so much kind of different than I feel like the past couple years where we just, I mean, God, we shot so many threes. We are so reliant on the three-point shot. And, I mean, yes, we know Carl Lee can shoot. I mean, we know that Jalen Withers can stretch the floor. We know David Johnson is a capable shooter, but obviously it seemed like he had to improve. Sam didn't take a whole lot of threes last year. So it's just going to be like, I feel like a different kind of basketball. I'm really hoping this year is a more kind of gritty, rough, slop it up type of game from Chris Mack versus last year, where, and I'm not dogging on the guys, but I think we kind of played a more finesse style on offense than I'm expecting us to play this year.
If you go back, like, this is kind of how Mac, I think, has always wanted to play, whether it's been at Xavier or here. He just hasn't had the right pieces in place to do it. And if you go back and look at his Xavier teams, like, they had some really good shooters. I mean, JP McCuro was a really good shooter. Quentin Gooden, I'm trying to think of who else. Who was the All-American they had just a couple years ago, whose name is now totally escaping me?
Bullet, or what's his name? Trayvon Bullitt. Don't know. Yeah.
Like, all those guys, capable outside shooters, but if you go back and look at Xavier's stats, they didn't take a whole lot of threes. Like, I think that the year they won the Big East, they took, like, the third fewest threes in the conference that year, his last season there, which was, it would have been, what, 2018? Like, they want to have a lot of shots in the paint. They want to go to the line a lot. They want to play bully ball. They want big guards that can get into the lane, get fouled, make shots, or dish the ball off to other bigs. Like, this team, they're going to have to assume that identity, and I think they're going to. You mentioned Carlick Jones, pretty good outside shooter. He's still, like that's kind of his second option. His biggest weapon at Radford was always getting into the lane and being a really, really elite finisher. David Johnson, that's obviously his bread and butter as well. And the other guys, if there's a really elite team, we haven't seen it yet. Like, we don't know if Josh Nickelberry can be that guy. And right now he's not even healthy. We don't know if Quinn can be that guy. It's going to be a different style. And I think it's going to take some getting used to, because, I mean, Louisville fans have been used to like the run and gun, the shooting a ton of threes for 2 decades now, even the first 2 years of the Chris Mack era. And it's just going to be a different animal when, you know, we get down by 8 in the second half and we're still kind of playing the same style. I guarantee people are going to get pissed. I guarantee people are going to be, you know, saying this is the wrong route to go, but it's the way it's going to be. And I think that a new era of, like, stylistically for Louisville basketball probably starts this year.
Yeah. And it is a little scary right now in the post area that we, at least from what I know, and Jalen could totally change my mind on this. Aiden Agahan, you know, maybe he worked on this in the offseason, but it doesn't seem like we have a true back to the basket post player. And it seems like we've always had one. So again, yeah, if we're not going to shoot a ton of threes and we don't have a real back to the basket type post player, it's going to be interesting, you know, to see how we get our points. And, you know, that's just one reason of, you know, kind of reason for caution. And another would be, obviously, we saw kind of the projected lineup, and we can get into that here in a minute. But as far as size go, I mean, there, rebounding has to be a concern with Malik Williams out. Like I said, Evansville, they don't look good on paper. It'll be a nice kind of, you know, gauge for us to kind of see what kind of players we have and what's working. But we need to figure some things out before Seton Hall gets here in a couple days.
Ever heard of a little guy who goes by the name of Gabe Wisnitzer?
I guarantee Gabe is probably like the guy that has like the robotic post moves. It's like, God damn, how's this guy score all the time? But I don't want to dog this kid, because I really do think he could end up being good. I just don't know anything about him.
No, I do too. I just think it's going to be like 3.5 years from now, probably. And it's why you're seeing, I'll say this, if they felt confident that he or Aiden Agahan are going to be really, really good in the next couple of years, they're not recruiting like it, because they got two big guys coming in the next class, and one of them is the highest rated player in that class, our guy Roosevelt Wheeler, who just sounds like a really productive Biggie center. I mean, he just sounds like an old school, or a guy who now would be at Xavier or Butler or Seton Hall and putting up 15 and 10 a night. Like, I'm excited for Roosevelt Wheeler, but I'm excited for Gabe. I'm excited for Aiden. I'm excited for these guys. And who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe they all just really, really surprise us. You mentioned the starting lineup. Let's talk about it. The game notes came out on Monday. And sometimes the game notes come out and the starting lineup, whenever it's revealed a couple of days later or a day later, totally different.
But that's a Rick Pitino special, but go on.
It totally is. But Mac's done it a couple of times in recent years, too. But the starting lineup that was in the game notes that came out on Monday night has the expected backcourt of David Johnson and Carlique Jones. And then it has Quinn Slezinski, DeAndre Davis, and Jalen Withers. So you've got a transfer from Radford. You've got David Johnson. You've got the lowest rated recruit in the Super Six. Super Six who got redshirted last year, and you've got a true freshman who none of us really know all that much about, and who wasn't expected to see big time minutes right off the bat. So, I mean, not exactly how we thought we were going to start this year, but hey, who knows? Maybe it winds up working out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. I'll just say it. It's pretty scary. I totally want to be proved wrong. I'm not saying it's going to be bad or awful. I just really don't know. I mean, we know David Johnson has NBA potential. Everything we heard about Carlique, it sounds like he's probably going to be our best, if not our second best player this year. With Quinn, we know he can shoot it from the outside. Everything else from game tape last year seemed a little questionable. Rebounding was he got shoved around a little bit, very slow feet on the defensive end. But again, he was just a freshman. I'm not going to dog the kid for it. Jalen, I mean, we just going off what people are saying in practice. I'm optimistic, but I have no idea. And same with Trey Davis. So, I mean, at this point, we're just going to have to tune in the TV and see what happens, because it's really anybody's guess.
Yeah, it really is. I don't even know who comes off the bench first. Like, if you had to guess, it's probably going to be Sam Williamson, because I mentioned last podcast, I'd heard that he was not really – the injury was taking a long time for him to get back. And at the beginning of this month, he was still not able to jump off the ground. So you knew he wasn't going to be fully ready to go by the time this game rolled around. But it sounded like in his press conference last week when he talked to the media that he said he was getting closer and closer to 100%. So he would be a safe bet to be the first guy off the bench if he doesn't wind up starting. I guess there's still a chance that he could be the starter tomorrow. But, I mean, if it's not Sam Williamson, who do you see as the first guy checking into the game for Louisville in this Evansville game?
I mean, for my sake, I hope it's Aiden Agahon. It's a little troublesome that, and again, we don't know what's going on in the offseason, but it's a little troublesome that he couldn't, if it doesn't happen, crack this starting lineup. And I mean, we saw last year, he has a long way to go with his development. But I mean, if there's ever a door open with, you know, with Malik out and we don't really have a true center behind him besides him and, you know, a true freshman, it seemed like it would kind of be his spot to grab. And for him not to grab it, I guess you could say that's a little bit worrisome and should maybe give us an idea of what to expect this year. But I would say either Sam or Aiden, those would be my guesses.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where, and maybe you're listening and you're doing the exact same thing, you keep racking your brain for like a guy on the team who's not actually there. You're like, I've got to be forgetting somebody. And you're not. Josh Nickelberry's hurt. He's Chris Mack all but confirmed on Tuesday that he's going to miss probably multiple games to start the season. Sam Williamson has been hurt. Malik Williams is obviously out. Charles Minland is out for the first few weeks of the season. J.J. Traynor is a true freshman who we haven't heard a whole lot about. I don't know how much he's going to be used this year. And then you also have to remember we're down a scholarship player because we took our last hit from the NCAA for the whole Katina Powell thing came this year. So all fun stuff, all good stuff to talk about. But the good thing when you're talking about all these injuries we're dealing with, all this inexperience, I actually – and I know the fans want to play a blue blood top 25 team every single game. I like the fact that we're opening up with Evansville. I like it even more than when we were opening up with Southern Illinois. And for a little bit of a frame of reference, Southern Illinois is picked to finish sixth in the Missouri Valley in their preseason poll. Evansville is picked to finish dead last. If you didn't know from last year, I'm sure you remember they beat Kentucky. It was a big thing, got a lot of love. They went 9-4 in the non-conference portion of their season, and then they fired their coach and lost 19 straight games to end the year. Went 0-19 in the Missouri Valley, 0-18 in the regular season, lost in the first round of the conference tournament, and they lost all their starters from that team. So I mean, Evansville, huge rebuilding phase. They were supposed to have Sam Cunliffe back, who still somehow has some college eligibility. He played at Kansas, played at Arizona State. He was the big hero in that Kentucky game. He decided to opt out of the season for COVID reasons. He's not going to play this year, but he still has one more year of eligibility. Basically, everybody else on their team who was any good last year went ahead and bounced. DeAndre Williams was probably the most talented player. He transferred to Memphis. They've got a couple guys back who played a little bit, but really nobody of any significance. They do have two guys that Louisville fans will be familiar with, or at least their last names. Jax Levitch, who played at Trinity. Once again, Trinity basketball becoming a theme of this podcast. He's had one more year of eligibility. Started his career at Indiana Fort Wayne, I believe, transferred to UNC Asheville, and then now he's going to wrap up at Evansville. And then Thomas E. Gilgis Alexander, who is Shea Gilgis Alexander's little brother, is also on this Evansville team. But besides that, I mean, they've got Logan Ballman as an assistant coach, my guy. Love Logan. He was awesome here. He's going to be a great coach one day. But it's a bizarre situation because Frank Licklider, who coached at Butler back in the day, coached at Iowa back in the day, took over midseason, and he inherited a bunch of pieces that Walter McCarty recruited to run up and down, but Licklider doesn't play that way. He's a half-court guy, so he's got some pieces that don't fit. This is a very roundabout, very wordy way of me saying they're not going to be very good this year. And I hate to say that because maybe they play Louisville closer than anybody's anticipating, but this should be an easy little dip of a toe into a pool. You should be able to see some guys get their feet wet without it costing Louisville on the scoreboard. And I think that's a good way to start this season where you have so much unknown.
You're right. Here's the thing. The first game of the year is always weird, no matter what. Like, sure. It's just everyone kind of has those first game jitters. And, you know, especially it seems like from the offensive end, it kind of takes, you know, the first two TV timeouts to maybe get into the flow of an actual basketball game. But with that being said, just kind of from the information you provided there, it would be a little worrisome if the game was tight, you know, going down the wire there in the second half. But Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a red-white scrimmage or anything like that. So, I mean, a lot of these guys, they're just, you know, kind of being thrown out into the fire without any real game experience, and they're going to have to get significant minutes. So, yeah, it's worked out, you know, with the injuries that this is going to be the first team that we played. It could have been a lot worse. So hopefully some guys, you know, not only get minutes, but maybe do some things to gain some confidence and carry that over and, you know, into the next couple ball games they have, you know, over this week's span.
So I mentioned in passing, I think it was the last podcast that you and I did together. It may have been me and Keith. I can't remember exactly, but I mentioned in passing that Walter McCarty used to have a reputation for hitting on my girlfriend, now wife. It happened multiple times, and people wanted me to expand on that. And I've got no problem expanding on that. So they had gone to – my wife had gone to Oaks, now then girlfriend. This is back in, like, 08. We're, like, 23 years old. That's an important thing to mention here. They were like, they went to the Oaks. Walter McCarty was around somehow. He kept like shamelessly hitting on her. It was creepy. It was weird. About a month later, we're at 4th Street Live where nothing good happens. And Walter McCarty comes over. I'm standing right there. And he's like, he doesn't even remember that he's ever met her. Goes to my girlfriend, now wife, and is like, "You are beautiful. You are drop dead beautiful." And she's like, "Thank you." And I'm standing right there. And he's like, "Is this your girl?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You better take care of her, man. You better take care of her, or I will." And I was like, "Are you?"
Was this the same night? Was I with you? Was this the same night where Earl went up to my wife and was like, "How come I ain't see you on the dance floor?" Yeah. And I was like, "Earl," I was like, "Go ahead, buddy, take her out. That's fine with me."
You were so proud of it. You were so happy. And I mean, I don't blame you. It's Earl Clark. But yeah, so I mean, was I surprised when I heard the story about Walter McCarty? No, I'm going to go ahead and say no. Had there been rumors of similar stuff going on for a long time? Yes. Is he a older married man with three kids? Yes. I mean, it was just, it was not shocking at all. And to hear
him. Dude, if me and you go to 4th Street, I mean, all bets are off. Anything can happen. I mean, back in the, I mean, what was this? Like, what year was this? Like 2000?
This is like not.
Yeah, 2009. I mean, God, we would just go down there and not to get in too much deep. I mean, we would just get blackout. Anyways, we'll save that for a different time.
If you weren't blacked out at 4th Street in 2009, you were far too aware of your surroundings and you were going to feel gross and you were going to want to leave. It was the only way to handle being at 4th Street Live back in those days. And God love them. God love the whole place. I miss it. Not really. There's actually zero part of me that misses that. But shout to Walter McCarty for creeping on my girlfriend.
They took my fake ID there. I still haven't really gotten over that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Real quick, before we take some questions from Twitter, Louisville's going to play Seton Hall on Friday. It's I guess you can call it the first marquee game of this season. It's going to be on, I believe, ESPN. Maybe it's ESPN2. It's a 4 o'clock tip-off. Seton Hall, they lost Miles Powell. They lost Romaro Gill. They lost the bulk of their production from last year's team that was so good. But they do have some interesting pieces back. Miles Kale's back, who I think has kind of been an underused guy for them in recent years. Sandro Mamouk Kalishveli is back. He's a All-American candidate. They also got Bryce Aiken, a transfer from Harvard, who, if he's healthy, can be really good. And then Ike Obiagu, another name that should be familiar to Louisville fans because he was one of the, you know, the 7'4" monsters that Florida State seems to funnel in here every single year from now on. But it's a game where if you look at the early line, I don't think there's an official Vegas line out right now, but the early gambling spreads seem to have it right around Louisville -3/-4. But this should be like a good test. The teams have played twice the last 3 years. They've been really close games. They beat us here at the Yum Center during the David Padgett year. We returned the favor the next year at their place in a really close game. You expect like Seton Hall and Chris Mack, there was no love lost at all between those two when he was at Xavier. So they've got a little bit of a bone to pick with us. I think this game means a whole lot to them. So, I mean, Friday, I'm excited already. I think it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, am I excited for Evansville? Of course, it's the first game of the year. I mean, why wouldn't I be excited? But it'll be great to get kind of a name program in here and kind of get your feet wet with them. I'm that lefty kid that I can't even pronounce his name. He's an All-American candidate. Did you say that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I knew he was good. Is he that good? I feel like Miles Powell just did so much for them last year that it felt like all the other guys in their team were almost role players. But I mean, obviously we know the brand of ball that Willard plays, that they totally like to muck it up and scrap it up and get physical. And I'm thinking Chris Mack will embrace that. So I think you'll see a lot of foul shots that game. A lot of people in foul trouble, but I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm surprised that they have Louisville as a 3 to 4 point favorite, to be honest. But I guess that could always change, you know, after Louisville plays tomorrow.
Yeah, Mamu Kalishvili, he averaged 12-6 last year. And you talk about the size issue that Louisville has right now. I mean, its starting lineup is small. Not going to be an issue against Evansville. Could definitely be an issue against Seton Hall. The starting lineup, and again, we don't know if this is what it's actually going to be, but if Bryce Aiken is good to go, if Ike Obiagu is good to go, their starting lineup is probably going to go 6 foot, 6'6", 6'6", 6'11", 7'2". That's going to be an issue for us. We're going to need Aiden Gahan to play some minutes in that game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I that's just a kind of a wait and see thing. I don't know. I'm so used to, I mean, we've had pretty big teams, I feel like, in the past, you know, decade, and for us to not really go out with any size, it's just going to be completely different. So I don't know how we're going to play. I don't know how we're going to combat that, but I'm sure Chris will have some sort of plan.
All right, before we take some questions from Twitter, we are sponsored by Home Field Apparel, and we've been mentioning that they're going to have some cool new deals for you guys to use. We've had the Card Chronicle promo code to save you 20% for the last few weeks. We now, for this week, because it's Black Friday week, we're going to save you 30% on all of Home Field Apparel stuff. If you go there this week, homefieldapparel.com, it's going to run through Cyber Monday, which is next Monday, November 30th. And if you check out and use the promo code BF Card Chronicle, should be easy enough to remember, BF Card Chronicle, you're going to save 30%. Get some Christmas shopping done. Get some stuff for yourself. Get ready for basketball season. Whatever you want to do, go to homefieldapparel.com anytime between now and Cyber Monday and use that promo code BF Card Chronicle, and you'll save 30% on t-shirts, on hoodies, on ladies' gear. They got tank tops. It's all great stuff. It's all got retro logos. If you want to buy other stuff than Louisville, you can still use that promo code, and it's still going to apply. So, again, big thanks as always to Home Field Apparel for sponsoring us. And check them out on social media and also at their website, homefieldapparel.com. Before we get into these questions, I want to say I saw the Louisville put out a video today. The team is in the Galt House. They're in the bubble for the next, I think, until December 4th. Other teams have arrived. I think Seton Hall gets here tomorrow. I believe Prairie View A&M is here. They're going to play Little Rock in the first game of the Wade Houston Tip-Off Classic. And our guy Jeff Greer on the call tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Debut. I'm so excited for it. I'm going to be having ESPN3 streaming at 1 o'clock. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm praying that he says little cock on accident and starts crying and like runs out of the Yum Center. Like, that's my new dream for tomorrow. But here's I can't imagine how much pressure there is on Louisville to pull this bubble off, because it's not just the basketball. It's making sure that the teams are, you know, properly good to go in their hotels, making sure that the rules are properly stated for, you know, who they can interact with and all this stuff. And if anything goes wrong, I think we got to do what we always do. Blame Kenny Klein. It's Kenny's fault. Anything goes wrong, guys test positive, guys sneak out, one team can't play, it's all on Kenny's head.
You joke. They're probably, Kenny probably is doing like a million things right now to get ready for this. To be honest, he's probably got so much on his plate, it's not even funny. So, I mean, Kenny's the best. Everyone loves Kenny. We hope he's here forever. But, yeah, I'm sure he's got a lot on his plate.
All right. Are you ready to answer some questions?
Let's go.
All right. Our guy Hank Tubbs, love Hank Tubbs. He says, how much would Adidas have to pay you to put a three-dimensional replica of the murder bird on top of your Christmas tree? Not much. I like the murder bird. I thought it was funny. I thought it was different. I embraced it. We actually have, I'm recording this, I always do the podcast in our basement here, and we have a Louisville tree. We have so many Louisville ornaments that my wife dedicates a single smaller tree to just Louisville ornaments. It's sitting right there. I would have no problem with the murder bird gracing the top of that tree. And if Mary would agree to it, I would put the murder bird on top of our actual tree for a reasonable fee. Not all that much.
I'm really jealous of your Louisville tree every time I see it. I need to to get in gear, and I my wife kind of handles the Christmas stuff, but I'm trying to like imagine like the murder bird like just gently placed over like a pick, like we have like a Dumbo ornament like right below it. It's like there's Dumbo and the murder bird. All right, Merry Christmas, everybody.
All right, are you ready for a little bit of in pod breaking news?
sound the alarm. Uh-oh, I hope it's good.
From Josh Kendall of The Athletic. Apparently South Carolina is going to interview Scott Satterfield for its vacant head coaching position.
What the fuck? Jesus Christ.
I mean, here's the one thing that I'll say about it. And again, we're doing this live, so who knows? Like, 5 hours from now, this could be totally different. Maybe Satterfield comes out and says, like, that's false. I'm not doing this interview. Maybe he does and says, I've got no interest afterwards. But he was awfully – I was surprised at how critical he was of Javian Hawkins opting
so
out.
So was I. I noticed that, too. I totally noticed that.
They mentioned during the broadcast on Friday night that he had actually told Javian Hawkins, like, don't do this. I would tell you not to do it if you were my son. And then after the game – went out of his way to praise Tutu Atwell and say, you know, basically like all these kids opting out across the country I don't want to make it more brash than it was, but he was basically saying like, you got all these kids opting out across the country. Tutu Atwell's not that kind of guy. He's the character that we want. He's all about his team. He wants to play these games. If you're going to spew that bullshit and then go ahead and interview for South Carolina before your team's season is done, that seems awfully hypocritical. And again, maybe I'm throwing stones that don't need to be thrown here because there's no substance to this. But, I mean, if it's being reported in The Athletic, they typically don't miss all that much. So, not saying I think he's going to leave, not saying I think I know anything at this point. But if he does interview with South Carolina, even if he winds up staying here, I'll be pretty disappointed.
I'll tell you what, this has caught me off guard. I'm very surprised by this. And if it's true, I mean, God, that's pretty disappointing.
Charlie Free says, will the snow globe make a reappearance this season? He's talking, if you have no idea what he's talking about, that's fine. But last, I guess, 3 or 4 years, we've had this decorative snow globe that I think my aunt gave us for Christmas a few years ago. It's kind of not a gag gift, but just sort of as a throw-in Christmas gift 1 year. And it's got two cardinals. It's a very wintry decoration. And I actually thought about getting it out when we had this little corner with a cardinal tree. And I've got the Russ Smith fake book for Russ on the shelf that I always bust out right there. So I thought about getting it out, but no, it's an after Christmas tradition. The snow globe always leads us to success in January. That's when it comes out. That's when it's going to happen. That's when it's going to bring us luck. And that's when we'll be talking about the snow globe. So Pat says, any good Dan in the Dump stories for Big Wednesday before Thanksgiving? Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was usually with you. I mean, it was just typically, you know, bar scene till 3-4 in the morning and then just wake up massively hungover. My family was always, we had Thanksgiving in Cincinnati. So not only did I have to like wake up hungover, I had to make the trek up to Cincinnati. But I mean, yeah, nothing out of the ordinary. I always loved when the Cards played around that time. It seemed like, God, they went forever without playing in like a Maui Invitational or anything like that, like the night before Thanksgiving. But yeah, I mean, usually it was just debauchery at the bars.
What was that word?
Debauchery. Debauchery. Fuck. Moving on.
I mean, somebody the other day, and I wish I remembered your name, was tweeting me about like, so have you totally moved on from like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving? I was like, my man, like that's been like 6 years from now. Like I'm married. I got a kid. Like I'm in my mid-30s at this point. I gave up on the wild night before Thanksgiving a long time ago. And honestly, I'm glad. Like I always kind of hated the night before Thanksgiving. Bars were too crowded. It was impossible to get drinks. I always kind of wanted to watch the Maui Invitational title game. So I would just sort of like saddle up at the bar and kind of zone out. Like it wasn't that fun of a night for me. And like you, like I had stuff to do with my family the next day. I had to watch the Lions lose. I don't want to be hungover for that. So it was, I don't know. It's one of those traditions.
I embrace the Thanksgiving hangover. Like it came with the territory. I mean, you go out hard Wednesday and you just know you're going to wake up and deal with it Thursday. So, I mean, it's not like we're going to work. We're going to sit around and watch football and eat Thanksgiving. So I was totally fine with being hungover as piss every Thanksgiving.
I was a big Friday after Thanksgiving guy. Like that was always more fun for me. You had football on during the day. You could drink then. You had, like in recent years, Louisville's been playing Kentucky on that Saturday in football. You always had basketball on. Like, I was just, I don't know. Like, that to me was more fun. And the bars were less crowded, whatever. Logan Wade, my guy, Transy basketball superstar, says, what, if any, UofL basketball player could you all never give up on and always thought they would turn the corner in their career, but they never did?
I got one right off the top of my head.
This is every player that you like every player that you feel like is going to be good. They wind up not being good, and then you stick with them for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh, okay. Well, the guy I'm thinking of was like somewhat good, but he definitely never lived up to his potential. I was thinking Derek Character. Like, I really thought, you know, we would just see flashes of Derek Character, and I was like, fuck, dude, he's under Rick now. Rick's going to get this guy in gear, and he's going to become dominant. And he just never did. Like, and I, no matter how lazy he got or just some of the shit he did, I did not want to give up on him. But he just never really panned out in what he thought he could be, even though he got some time in the NBA.
The first time I ever met Rick Pitino, I think it took him 10 minutes for him to tell me a Derek Character story. And it made me so happy. Like I don't even know how it came up, but he was telling the story, and I don't care. I'll tell it on the podcast. Like, this is what you get for being a podcast listener. But he was like, it's less funny in hindsight, given what happened in the years after this conversation happened. But apparently Derek was trying to bring a girl into Minardi Hall, back in the day. And Ralph Willard had been, you know, they were told when the kids got caught on video trying to do something or being at curfew, the assistant coaches got notified. And so Ralph Willard called Derek in and was like, Derek, we've got you on camera. You're bringing a girl into Minardi. Like, what are you doing? We're gonna have to tell coach about this. And he's like, Derek starts telling a story, and he's like, this girl was on her bike and she was away from her dorm and she lost her student ID, so she couldn't get into her dorm. And I was just trying to let her in there and help her out until she could figure out how to get into her own dorm, because I knew it was scary out there. And Ralph Willard looks at him and goes, I'm going to have to call coach in 10 minutes. Do you want to think of a bat? And Derek goes, all right, hold on.
Oh God. I mean, he really is like a likable, he's not a kid anymore, but at the time, like he was a really like affable, likable kid. And I don't even want to say it didn't work out, because he was, you know, he had some productive years for us, but never what I thought he could really, you know, be.
We'll always have the baseline spin against Aaron Gray. It never got better after that. That was it. He had that moment, and then it was all David Padgett from that point.
What? Who's your answer to this question?
Oh yeah, I guess I didn't answer. I thought, like, I never thought he would be a superstar, but I thought Anton Gill would eventually be like a solid contributor, like a knockdown outside shooter, a guy who could, you know, every now and then go off for 25 on a given night, maybe like a 9-10 point per game score. And my God, those percentages never went up. Like, I don't think he ever shot the three at a better than 24% clip at Louisville. And then he went to Nebraska and it really didn't get a whole lot better out there. I kept waiting for him to come around. And outside of that Sweet 16 game against NC State, it never really happened.
Besides, I mean, he is one of the most forgettable Cardinals you could think of. I mean, sure. Besides the NC State game, I don't think he made anything of significance. Like, I can't remember one specific play that he was involved in. Like, just a weird career after kind of the way he was hyped up in high school.
All right, next question is from, let's see, Brian says, what's your favorite topic that would ruin Thanksgiving? I mean, anything politics or religion. Yeah, besides that, I guess we gotta get creative here.
UK basketball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with your family, though, like, you don't have any UK fans. That would be the dinner table, right?
I know, yeah. I mean, we really don't. I don't know. I mean, we all are generally fans of the same team. We're a pretty non-combative group, so I'm really probably not the person to ask for this. But, yeah, I mean, just in general, I don't know. Sometimes the UK train does get brought up, maybe from like a random cousin who doesn't like follow it like we do. And I'm like, well, slow your roll here.
Maybe like the quality of the food. I think I'd say that. Like if I insulted like my mom's or my mother-in-law's food, that'd be the last straw. It'd go poorly.
We like to make dig, like when we have cousins like that are younger and they bring over boyfriends or girlfriends for the first time, sometimes people can get a little, you know, they turn into little chatterboxes and word gets around. So that's kind of fun.
Let's see here, which by the way, I would never insult. I'm very fortunate. Both we rotate Thanksgivings with my family. We do 1 year here in Louisville with my family and the next year in Springfield where my wife's from. And both dinners are really, really good. And I'm not just saying that. Like both.
Way to save face. Good answer.
Both families are very, very good cooks. Both are fantastic. How about this? Question from still the voice of the Cards in my eyes. Always be the voice of the Cards. Sean Moth at CardsPA on Twitter says, name the four teams most likely to have won the 2020 men's basketball title had the pandemic not shut down the season. That's a great question. I don't know if you have an answer. I feel like Florida State's been getting a lot of love from people recently, and I don't see it. Like Leonard Hamilton's never been to a Final Four. I don't think they had a lot of talent. They would have flamed out. There's no doubt in my mind. People forget that seasons besides the last two just happened. He's made so much of a reputation for himself off of these last 3 years. Like more times than not, they lose to somebody they shouldn't in the NCAA tournament. I think that would have happened again this year. I'll say the four teams most likely. Kansas, I think you have to throw them in there. I don't think they would have ended up being my pick, but I would throw them in there. Gonzaga, I was big on. I think they were the real deal, and I definitely think they're the real deal this year. I tell you what, I think depending on how they were going to play in the Big Ten tournament, I remember I was thinking going into championship week, I was leaning towards picking Michigan State to win the national title. I think they were peaking at the right time. Cassius Winston had finally gotten over all that stuff with his brother at the beginning of the year. So I would throw them in my four. And then not San Diego State. I'll put Dayton in there. I would say Kansas, Gonzaga, Dayton, and Michigan State.
This is like asking me to like name like who made the Final Four in like 1976. Like this seems so long ago. I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, okay, how did the season end? But yeah, I mean, Kansas, they had Dotson and Azubuike. I put them in there. I would probably put Gonzaga as well for the other two teams. God, I mean, you know, I actually thought Virginia was starting to get it together at the end of the year. Like they were so bad offensively, obviously the first kind of half or three fourths of the ACC. And it seemed like they were starting to pick it up offensively. Jay Huff was playing better. And I just think defense is key once you get into tournament time. So I'll say Virginia, and then I'll say, oh shit, I'll say Seton Hall just to say Miles Powell got hot.
I like that. I feel like they were going to be a trendy Final Four pick. That's a good one. Doctor of Dunk, our guy. Brief example on the movie aside, how good of a handicapper was Irv Blitzer?
No tumbleweed.
I mean, you gotta say it's got to be bad, right? I mean, he's at what looks like a podunk, like offshore book, not doing well. Doesn't look like he's living a very luxurious life. I'd say he's a bad handicapper.
Yeah. I mean, his transformation from just, you know, degenerate deadbeat handicapper to like, you know, like the fact that he was an all Olympic bobsledder at one point was quite the transition there. But yeah, love Irv Blitzer, John Candy, one of the best.
RIP, John, we love you. Tim Stark, if you could only invite one Cardinal basketball team over for Thanksgiving, what time would the 2013 championship team show up and why? Would that be your pick?
Whew.
Guys on that team.
Yeah, I mean, there was some guys like, I mean, I don't know. I do. I mean, like the starting five, or like the first six, seven rotation players. All. I mean, I love everyone on the team. I'm just trying to think if there's another team. I'm kind of biding time thinking about other teams that I like possibly more. I really got a soft spot for that 2011 team with Preston. I just love that team. I'd probably pick them if I could pick anybody.
I'm going with the title team. They're showing up at 3:30 for 4 o'clock dinner. What time does your family eat dinner on Thanksgiving? I always think it's bizarre that, like, for whatever reason, we just choose to eat dinner at like 2 o'clock or like 7 o'clock, or like where everybody's all over the place.
It's usually right after, like, I want to say it's like 3:30 to 4, usually after the Lions lose. As soon as the game ends, we sit down and feast for the most part. But I always get confused with like lunch. Like, what's your lunch deal? We do like heavy apps and that's it. And then just kind of go straight into Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we do. I feel like we're even if I'm here or in Springfield, we do kind of like a late sort of breakfast, like kind of brunchy type foods, and then early dinner. I don't know why Thanksgiving dinner, though, can't be at 6 like every other dinner. It seems strange. Like, we don't do Christmas dinner at, you know, 4:30. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe
are you drunk by the time you sit down for Thanksgiving dinner?
No.
No? Okay. Just checking.
I can't. If I'm drinking during the day, I've got to have like, I've got to be around like friends. I've got to be around like a sporting event or something.
Oh yeah. No, you're a night owl. I'm well aware. I've known you long enough. You're a night owl. You start throwing them back, you know, once the sun goes down. So, yeah, totally understandable.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been like maybe I've been kind of tipsy for Thanksgiving dinner, but it's so early. I'm definitely never drunk. Will Wigginton says, say U of L is projected to play 24 games this year. Are you taking the over or the under? Well, let's see. I mean, right now on the schedule, they've got 27 games scheduled. So if you're counting, throwing in the ACC tournament, throwing in the NCAA tournament, or I guess, you know, a different postseason tournament if Louisville didn't make it, I'd say that they'll play over 24 games if I had to guess. I would hope they would.
I know. That's why I'm like praying it's over. But yeah, I would. Oh, God. I don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen. Like, I could see just like, I don't know. I mean, in reality, it seems like a ton of games are getting canceled right now. And like, they really are. But like, still like 80% of the games are still going to happen. So and like 20% aren't as of right now, like the first day of game. So I don't know. I'll say yes, but who knows? This thing could go haywire the first 2 weeks, and they could scrap the whole non-conference, and I have no idea.
Yeah, the good thing is once we get to tomorrow, you're going to have all the teams that you're going to play in your first 5 games all in Louisville, all bubbled up, so you would assume that those 5 games, like you're definitely going to have 5 games in the non-conference, and then we'll see what happens with conference play and the games against Wisconsin and Kentucky, but I don't feel good about anything right now, but I would take the over and feel fairly confident about that. But I do think there will at least be a few cancellations here and there. The can opener says, what's the status of Maverick Rowan's recruitment? And is it about time we start Kyle Bowlen over Will Gardner? Do you think, like, when we look back 20 years from now at Louisville sports during this decade, is the fact that some people, there was a legitimate debate between Kyle Bowlen and Lamar Jackson, like the most ridiculous we've ever looked?
I actually think I was like, I think we need to give Kyle more of a look. I was on that.
The tweets are still out there somewhere, I believe.
I mean, I'm not going to deny it. I was like, all right. I mean, like the first thing that pops up with Kyle is the comeback against UK. Obviously. So he'll always, that'll kind of be what he hangs his hat on. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what a kind of a weird, random career Kyle Bowlen had.
I'm trying to sort through these now. Like, because we're doing this live, like, every question I'm getting is about Scott Satterfield. So yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier. We're kind of just going on the fly here with the whole Satterfield thing. Who knows? Maybe you're listening to this and you're laughing at us because Satterfield's currently the South Carolina head coach.
God, I mean, I won't go up too off tangent, but I really hope it's not true. And if he is interviewing, I'm pretty pissed off.
Yeah. Caleb says no Louisville men's basketball player has averaged 20 or more points in a season since Reese Gaines did it back in his junior year. Jordan Ward got close last year at 18 points per game. Is there a player on this roster who can break that streak this year? And if so, who?
No.
I don't think there's any chance. But if there is, I assume you're going to say the same thing I am. It's got to be Carlick Jones.
Because
David Johnson's your most talented player, but he's not going to be a score first guy. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who gets you 22 a game. Sam Williamson, I mean, maybe we thought he could be that guy, but he didn't show it last year. If Carlick Jones is going to be a high usage offensive player,
do you think it's bad or good if he does average 20?
Probably bad.
I think so too. I think because we know he can score, but I mean the thing on him is it sounds like he's good at getting everybody else involved, and you know if he's averaging 20, I don't know how much we're getting other guys involved or how much of a role they have. So I would lean more towards bad if we have him averaging 20 a game.
I mean, I guess if he was averaging like 22 and Sam Williamson was, if we were sort of like a three-man team.
Yeah.
Kind of like we were for a period in 2015 with Trez and Terry Rozier and Chris Jones, where they were scoring all the points and using all the offensive possessions. I mean, that team was a disappointment sort of until the NCAA tournament, but still relatively successful. I guess they could be okay, but I would lean more towards that being a bad thing, but I don't know. Who knows? Let's see here. Peter Hebner, how much could Elijah Justice bench? A lot. The bullet. He had guns.
He's huge. The bullet, yeah. I mean, he did look jacked just for being a small little kid. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'll say 215.
Winner of the hottest male athlete.
I forgot about that.
From a website whose name I cannot say. Even on this podcast, can't say it. Don't think it exists anymore. Look it up, folks. It's in the Chronicle Archive. Ethy Clark says, Chris Mack can't coach basketball because of reason X. Which other UofL coach takes over and you trust to pull off a win? It can't be a member of either basketball staff. So basically, what UofL coach of a different sport would you trust to coach the men's basketball team to victory?
Can we put Vince Tyra on the sidelines?
Well, he's not a coach, so no.
I know he's not a coach, but he's part of the university. Yeah, I mean, so he can't be a coach. I mean,
last name's also Tyray, Dan.
Respect
the AD here.
My bad. Shout out, Vince. I'll let you answer it.
He's not listening.
It's like, God, I hope not.
I mean, zero hesitation here for me. I'm going Dan McDonald. I feel like he is the most, he could, at the very least, he could motivate you to play hard. He would be an inspirational guy during timeouts. He might not know anything about basketball, but he could get you excited to play. And that's half the battle in this situation, I think.
I love Dan McDonald. I really do. What he's done with baseball has been unbelievable. However, I am still bitter that he left Luke Smith in the ninth inning after the shit-talking against Vanderbilt. I don't know if I'm going to get over that for a while because it was so obvious he needed to come out of the game.
So do you have an answer?
I'll agree with you. I'll say Dan McDonald. I know it's a cop-out. Love you, Dan.
Chris Hatfield, my guy. Everybody's my guy on this podcast, apparently. Says over under until how long we have someone fighting over a girl. Remember this thing where I say this every single year, whenever Louisville basketball or Kentucky basketball for that matter hits a slide in the middle of the season, there's always a rumor that somebody on the team is sleeping with somebody on the team's girlfriend. Like it's usually the guards, but I shit you not. Like 2 years ago, I did the live show with Tyus and Tate when they were doing you were there. Kind of.
We had just come back from Breeders' Cup. I was on a different planet.
But so I told that story on their pod at that show, and I told it on their podcast last year. And literally 2 days after the podcast went live, I got like two DMs from somebody telling me the same rumor about last year's team, the same two players involved, and the same girl involved. And it 100% was not true, but it happens every single year. So I'll say, I mean, that's usually like a late January, early February thing, or maybe like mid-January thing. I'll say we make it through the first 2 months of the season without any sort of rumor like that.
Yeah, we got COVID going on. We're gonna duck that rumor this year.
Agreed. This question's right up your alley, and well, actually, it's so good we'll make it the last question. But Chris Gleim, I hope I'm saying your last name right. I want to know your guys' favorite stadium personality. Freedom Hall stand guy, boogeyman, etc. Dan, you broke these down like before I think anybody. You were breaking these characters down when we were like 12 years old.
I mean, I sat behind Sadat, who did the handstands. I mean, he's a personal favorite, so I'll always put him number one just because he was so nice to our family. I love that guy. But I mean, other personalities, God, I mean, it is really hard. Jacket Waiver just has an absolute special place in my heart. He used to sit up in section 341, and I would look up there from right behind the goal. And I mean, he would be on the rail and that jacket would be going. And I get sad. I mean, I do see him sometimes at the Yum Center, but not nearly as much. But dude, he used to get Freedom Hall just fucking rocking. And then our guy referee shirt. I mean, what an absolute legend he was. Like in his heyday, he could just sprint down those stairs. And like he was doing that even before he had his referee shirt. And then like one year he just showed up with the referee shirt and it was like, you know, just went instant legend on us. So even like old ones back in the day when we used to have the marching band where the guy he'd go up above the student section, Freedom Hall, and he'd run back and forth and spell CRDS, and they'd gradually make the song faster, and he'd go and go and until the song was over. So that, I mean, that's the thing I miss most about Freedom Hall, honestly, is just the personalities. But I'll give the nod to Sadat.
Love Sadat. Love the runner. I think Rob Hickerson, I think is his name.
Yeah,
that guy's awesome. Referee shirt. Actually sat in front of referee shirt for the Michigan State Elite Eight game. Love referee shirt. My man was blaming everything on Earl Clark that day, though. Like, and Earl was the only guy we had play who played well in that game. Like, I mean, Goran Suton would hit a three from the top of the key when we'd be in zone, and Earl's like under the basket because we're in a zone, and referee was like, "God damn it, Clark!" I was like, "Okay, referee, let's. I love you, buddy, but let's focus on the refs here."
There's one guy I don't want to leave out. I mean, God, he used to sit like in the section over from me, like directly behind the goal opposite of the student section, Freedom Hall. Me and my brother would call him Cactus Jack. He had like this long beard and sunglasses and looked exactly like Cactus Jack. And when people would shoot free throws, he would wave his Papa John's breadsticks back and forth. It was honestly, I was like, I absolutely love this guy. Like, we couldn't get enough of Cactus Jack.
God damn it, I miss Freedom Hall.
So do I. It's like, you hold on to it, Bellarmine. You hold on to it well. You
cherish it, even though poor Bellarmine dealing with COVID now. Welcome to D1. You're playing Duke at Duke on one day of practice. Congrats. It's going to be shout to the night. Shout to Scotty and Doug D. You want to read some reviews before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
We got two new reviews. The first one is by Aldo Montoya, whose title is Dan the Dumpster Drozy. I guess a play on your Duke the Dumpster Drozy story from last week. If you've been looking for a podcast that has quality UofL sports and Duke the Dumpster Drozy stories, your search is over. Five-star pod. It's a five-star review. A lot of Dan in reviews this week. The next review is from Zeke, who says, titled Dan Demand, love the podcast, especially when Dan is on. I need weekly recaps of his worst hangovers.
Yeah, well, I don't know how long he has, but pull up a chair one day at a bar, but we can talk about it.
All right. Do we have speaking of Dan of the Dumps, do you have a Dan of the Dumps story for this week?
We can say it's not really a Dan in the Dumps. It's just it kind of fits the mold of the week coming up. So we have the Wade Houston Invitational coming up.
Tip off classic.
Excuse me. I know I butchered that already. Obviously, back in the day, we used to have the Billy Minardi Classic, and me, you, and our buddy Weber coined this term. He used to call it the Bill. So we're going to call this week the Wade. Love the Wade. But anyways, the Bill always happened like right before, it was like right around Christmas break for whatever reason. And I mean, the games were always like against just absolutely shitty opponents. I think I texted you last night. I think we only lost one of them and it was to UMass. I think it was Peyton Sivas' freshman year. I think it was our last year in Freedom Hall, if I'm not mistaken. But anyways, with that being said, usually, I mean, our family had season tickets, and I like to bring my friends to a lot of the games, but, you know, sometimes we played shitty teams. It was hard to give the tickets away or whatnot. So, for some reason, like, I don't even know, like, I went to like the first couple of Billy Marty classics, and then it might've been like the fourth or fifth one. I remember like either you or my buddy Weber asked like, oh, who's going to the game with you tonight? And I mentioned some girl, and he was like, is this like the fifth Billy Minardi classic in a row you've taken a date to? And I literally was like, oh my God, it has been. Like, I have no idea how, like, I'm not I wasn't a ladies man. I have no game at all, but for whatever reason, like, I guess I was lonely before Christmas. I was always taking chicks to the Billy Minardi classic. I was thinking, like, it kind of reminds me of that scene, you know, when in Saved by the Bell, when Jeff and Kelly get together and Zach goes on all those blind dates and he keeps taking his dates to the movie theater, and every scene it's like the gunshots, it's like ah, and like the date ends up being awful. Like me, every time I'm sitting there with a girl, it's just like Sean Moth in the back, it's like three Williams,
three,
like,
people listening,
yeah, exactly, and like the date like
die. Everybody else like shut up.
Exactly. But I did end up taking my now wife to a Billy Minardi classic, and I think because she actually paid attention and was enthusiastic about it, I think that's why we never went to the Max, and she never threw a chocolate malt on me, and we ended up getting married. So anyways, that just kind of a weird thing. Enjoy the Wade, love is in the air, and please embrace this week.
I hope somebody like meets the love of their life at the Wade this week, or like starts a beautiful relationship, because it's like the Bill invite was really the Louisville equivalent of the rose. Like that was how you knew Dan was serious. Like you weren't just tossing out Bill invites to anybody. It wasn't.
This is true. Yeah. I mean, like I wasn't just handing the tickets away, but yeah, I was like thinking about that last night. I was like, was I lonely around Christmas or something? Like what was the deal there? But yeah, funny how it worked out.
I would write a thing about the Billy Minardi classic on Card Chronicle every year, including like little fun facts, and I would always throw that in there, and multiple members of the Minardi family were very much enjoyed it, like very much loved the fact that Dan was bringing different girls. And then I think it was like in I guess 2011 when you were only going to bring one girl, it lost its luster a little bit. Like now you're, you know, you had Kim, you were going to get married, you were going to have kids, and the Bill invites obviously stopped coming. But in its heyday, the Bill phenomenon was just wonderful. It was a very, I looked forward every year to who you were going to bring.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it really was. And yeah, I know your buddies with Will, and I mean, it was a fun event. It was a great tournament. All good things, you know, come to an end, and we're moving on to the Wade, and hopefully we can win them all here.
Final fact, and I know you knew this at one point, but you may have forgotten it. I got engaged on a Billy Minardi classic day. I proposed to Mary like 3 hours after we beat Western Kentucky in the 2013 Bill.
God, that is absolutely wild. Yeah, I've had no such love story. I remember taking Kim to a random Western Carolina loss game. It was like one of the first games I ever took her to. It was the last year in Freedom Hall. We lost to Western Carolina. I was like, it's usually not like this, God damn it.
Oh, fuck. All right. We've rambled on too long. Basketball's back. We talked no football outside of Scott Satterfield maybe leaving. We won a game, 30-0. We're undefeated in the Atlantic Division. We hosted College Game Day this year. We're going to the playoff. But, hey, basketball's back. Beat Evansville. Beat Seton Hall. We are going to preview the Boston College game with Keith later this week. But until then, hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoy all the hoops. Hope you enjoy all the football. Hope you enjoy your family. Hope you stay safe. And until we talk to you guys again, go Cards.
Go Cards.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.